time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Andy Chan. Andy Chan is longtime volunteer, board member, and past president of Books to Prisoners, and we're going to talk about Books to Prisoners and the upcoming Seattle Social Justice Film Festival. Andy, thank you very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here.
So to start out, tell us about Books to Prisoners.
Books to Prisoners is a local nonprofit, local to Seattle. It was established in or around 1973, so this is our 40th anniversary. And, well, as the name suggests, we send books to prisoners. We send books out all across the United States to guys in state, federal, and local incarceration.
All right. And how did you get involved with Books to Prisoners?
Boy, I got started with the program back in 1994, actually. I moved to Seattle, and I was looking for something meaningful to do. I'd always been involved in progressive politics and movements, and I was basically looking for something to do, and I wandered into Left Bank Books in Pike Place Market and just asked someone, hey, what should I do? And they just pointed me in the direction of Books to Prisoners, and I just kind of like sat down there and wrapped packages and sent them out to prisoners, and eventually over time, you know, sort of got to be in a position in which suddenly I'm doing the finances and I'm opening things and I'm fundraising and things like that. I wouldn't say that when I first started that my motivation was, you know, a huge interest in prison issues. I don't think for a lot of people that sort of their focus is going to be on criminal justice and prison issues, because, you know, it's such a marginal part of society. It's just the longer I volunteered there, the more I realized how marginalized it was and how important, you know, the issue is. And yet it receives so little focus. You know, there might have been other areas in which I, you know, was more interested, but the need was so patent, was so obvious that I figured it was just made much more sense to focus on something like criminal justice and the prison issue than some of the other things. And that's basically how I've stood since then.
And it's a... Tell us a little bit about give listeners an idea about the number of people incarcerated in this country.
Well, in the entire criminal justice system in the United States, I think we're just still hovering at over 2 million people, 2 million people in the entire United States, which, as you know, out of a population, I think just over 300 million is huge. It's the largest, the United States incarcerates the largest percentage of their population of any country in the world. They also have the largest number of prisoners incarcerated in the world, more than China, more than India, more than Russia. It's quite astounding.
Yeah, I think I read like a quarter of the world's people in prison are like in the U.S. Is that right? Or did I get that one wrong?
I wouldn't be at all surprised. I think. Sorry, I don't know that statistic.
Don't mean to throw statistics. Oh, yeah. So you mentioned Left Bank Books. It started at Left Bank Books. Is it still there?
That's one of the undecided mysteries of the creation of Books to Prisoners is some people still seem to think that Left Bank Books came first. I met one of the original founders of Left Bank at a party, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And I'd always been led to believe that Left Bank had established Books to Prisoners. But as she told me, Books to Prisoners came first. It started out amongst the same kind of core of people. And you know, kind of somewhat different from our general stance now, but it started as a support group for political prisoners, specifically related to the Black Panthers and some of the other radical groups who had members incarcerated back in the early 1970s. Of course, since then, we've, I'm not going to say necessarily evolved, but the mission has changed to be, you know, to be much broader than specifically political support into education and literacy in general.
So you serve a population of 2 million with your one organization?
Yeah, that would be quite something, wouldn't it? If an organization of our size could serve 2 million people. No, we only serve a tiny fraction of the prison population. I mean, it's huge to us and has grown pretty much every year since I've been there. So that now, I think in 2011 we received about 14,500 requests. Yeah, 14,500 into 2 million is tiny, but it's still pretty huge considering that we're an all volunteer organization, work doing this in a very part-time kind of way.
Yeah, it's inspiring that you are an all volunteer organization. No one's getting paid to do.
That's right.
Doing.
Yeah, everybody from board members and the core volunteers down to the people who wrap the packages and send them out are all volunteers, and we always have been. You know, we're getting to a point where we have to question whether it is still possible to do this as an all volunteer organization, just because the workload is so heavy, and of course, you know, it's not just picking out books from our library and wrapping them and sending them off. There's so many other different functions that we have to do, most of which are not very fun, you know, not very exciting. You know, doing the finances, trying to raise funds, even just keeping the place open and closed and cleaning and stuff like that. Those require people who have a greater deal of commitment than just dropping in. And it's been difficult. It's been difficult to maintain a core of people. I've certainly other organizations. I mean, and oh, I should just finish the last question there. It isn't just Books to Prisoners in Seattle. We ourselves have three sister organizations, one in Portland, one in Olympia, and one in Bellingham, with whom we work most closely, and who basically spun off from us. In addition to them, there are other organizations which grew up independently across the United States, in Pennsylvania, Texas, Massachusetts, and a bunch of other different places. None, I think, are as big as Books to Prisoners, and I think Books to Prisoners is the original, the oldest of the organizations, but there are other ones out there. Again, all just dealing with a tiny fraction of the organization, of the number of prisoners that are out there. But yeah, no, we are starting to have to consider the possibility of getting some kind of paid part-time assistance just to keep the program going. And the problem with that is then, of course, you know, finding the money to pay for something like that when it's been difficult to raise the funds to just keep the program sending out books.
And how much, just for like postage, how much of your budget goes towards that?
It's been about almost two-thirds of our income has gone to postage. We only even started paying rent on a place in 2009, I believe. So prior to 2009, probably about 90%, 95% of all of our income went directly into sending the books out. But now that we actually have to pay a rent in the U District, it's about two-thirds, which is still really, you know, pretty amazing compared to some of the big nonprofits out there, which, you know, have a tiny fraction of their funds actually going to do what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. Again, amazing work where all volunteer, you know, two-thirds of dollars donated go just to pay for postage.
Yeah.
So are you a 501c3? Are you a nonprofit where people can donate and feel, you know, get that bonus, feel good about it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can donate to Books to Prisoners and get that tax write-off. It was a struggle to do the 501c3 because, again, as a small organization, sort of on the fringes of society, we had to have a good old argument amongst the board as to whether we were actually going to do that. We'd always had a fiscal sponsor so that people could donate to us, but it was, you know, there was all kinds of whistles and bells that had to sort of, or hoops, sorry, there was all kinds of hoops that had to be jumped through in order to do that. So yes, we are a 501c3.
So you mentioned that in 2011 you got 14,500 letters. Is that how prisoners request books, is the old-fashioned handwritten letter?
We are single-handedly keeping the United States Postal Service afloat. So why they're going to raise the costs on us next year, we're kind of disappointed by that. But, most prisoners don't have access to email or any other means of communication. We certainly couldn't be affording the collect call charges, which would be probably the only other way that they could communicate with us. So all of the requests that we get come through the mail.
Yeah, we could probably do a whole show on the scam of the phone service that they offer to prisoners at an incredibly jacked up rate.
Oh, there was recently a court case that was just settled against AT&T in which they have had to pay out millions of dollars to families of prisoners for exactly that reason.
So amongst the letters that come in, do you ever get feedback from the books that you have sent out to prisoners?
It's surprising and not as much as I would expect to get. So when we do get a letter of thanks, it's a great thing, and there are some really fantastic letters that people will write. I have a couple if you would like me to read a couple.
That would be great.
Sure. I've got this one here from a male prisoner in Arizona. He says, this is something I wanted to share with you. At the most rarest of times, when I've been at the core of suicide and depression, your services have always been consistent and contributed to the foundation of my struggle. Without books to learn and sources such as yourselves that provide indigent prisoners an opportunity to learn, I'd be completely hindered by blindness and ignorance. I'm not sure that you understand the magnitude of my deepest appreciation. This is coming from someone at the very bottom of society's have-nots and abandoned. I got one here from a prisoner in Texas. He writes, you guys did more for me than people who carry my last name. I've been an avid and voracious reader since I received those three books. You guys created a reading monster, so to speak. I can't go back to a life of crime knowing that what my brothers and sisters in times past went through to make this racially white-dominated society a better place for brothers like me to live in. And one of the, one of the most touching letters that I ever saw, I kind of get choked up whenever I think about it, is we got this letter from a guy in Texas, and this was a few years ago, but he sent it on the 10th of May, which is important when I just read this tiny little fragment of the letter. He writes, dear sir, I would like to thank you for the books you sent me last month. I am to be executed May 30th, and your books will give me a lot of pleasure in the days left to me. I mean, just to think that sort of for someone who's, you know, had maybe, you know, less than 3 weeks to live, would you know, bother spending some time, you know, actually just writing a thank you note to us is just it's quite amazing to me.
Yeah, it's amazing when you think that at least when I was a kid, we were told prisons were there to rehabilitate people and not punish them as they appear to be designed now.
Yeah, I mean, sort of the first things that go when they cut budgets are things like books. Education programs probably come the next after that, because, you know, when everybody decided that the thing to do was to be tough on crime, The idea is, well, you do something bad, you must be punished, without really giving any thought to the fact that almost all of the guys who ever go to prison are going to be getting out of prison. And how does society want these people to be? Sure, there's going to be a percentage which are chastened by the experience, but there's also going to be a lot of people who are extremely angry about their experience if they've experienced nothing but punishment, and if they particularly have no alternatives when they leave prison, having a criminal record does not do wonders for your employability. So if you have no additional skills when you leave prison than when you left, except, you know, a great ability to rob or burgle or do whatever you do, where do you think people are going to turn to? I mean, what is their alternative if they can't get a job to survive?
So what types of books do you get requests for?
Wow. The one book that is impossible to keep on our shelves, because as soon as we get them in, they go out, is dictionaries. There's just such an incredible need for dictionaries. It's amazing. I don't know. I mean, it's people when they ask me that question, when new volunteers, they're all surprised. I don't know what they're expecting, but these guys, a lot of them, they want to learn. They want, you know, they don't have their GED or their high school graduation, and they've got time on their hands. These guys are people who want to learn. And other highly requested things are Spanish English dictionaries. Again, we've got a lot of people who only speak Spanish who want to learn English, and we've got a percentage of people who are English, and because there's so many Spanish speakers. People in the prison, they want to learn Spanish. Black history, black studies. A lot of guys want to find out more about Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and the Black Panthers, and find out more about the history. Of course, you know, a lot of those genre fictions are very popular too, like horror and sci-fi and fantasy, that which, again, should be no real surprise when you're locked up for 23 hours in your cell. A little bit of escapism is pretty handy. A lot of GED requests, and again, that's one of our tougher things to deal with, because we almost never get donations of GED materials. Because these guys, they want to get their high school equivalency. So those are some of the biggest requests that we get.
And do you accept donations, book donations? Can people bring you their books, used and or new?
Yeah, absolutely, of course. Sometimes when we ever get any press anywhere, we just get a welter of stuff, and we would appreciate not, because we have limited storage, and eventually there's only much storage space for romance novels and things like that. So yeah, I mean, sort of our website, which is bookstoprisoners.net, has a handy list of the genres which are most important to us and the ones which we want to avoid. New books are fantastic. They're like gold dust, because there are a lot of prisons, Washington State included, which will only accept new books. That's a slightly different subject. Hardback books, we really try to avoid getting hardback books if, you know, unless they're in the most desired genres and subjects, because A, for us, they're heavier and so therefore more expensive to send in, but also a pretty high percentage of prisons will not accept hardback books. On the website there's ways to find out how to donate books.
Yeah, I see you on your website, on your list of things you're looking for, you have specifics: books on chess, books on drawing.
Yeah. Again, I should mention things like that. I mean, chess, fantastic activity, brain activity for folks. drawing, a lot of requests for drawing, and again, it's very difficult to get books. What you have to remember is that the guys in prison are not an equal cross section of American society. A lot of undereducated folks are in prison, obviously. A lot of poor people are in prison. A lot of racial minorities are in prison, and they don't read things in the same way that the average Seattleite would read. In federal prisons, 37% of the population is black. In federal prison, 35% of the population is Hispanic. That's just nothing close to what the general public is in the United States.
So if people have questions on that, they can as to specific items you're looking for, then the website is the best outlet for that.
Yep.
Books2prisoners.net. Okay. We've got about 8 minutes left. Your organization is also involved with the Seattle Social Justice Film Festival. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. The Seattle Social Justice Film Festival existed for a short period of time. I think 2009 was its origination. And then it took a hiatus. And I think it was end of last year or even the beginning of 2013, in part of our drive to raise the profile of Books to Prisoners, we decided that the time was ripe to revive the Social Justice Film Festival. I think we had some pretty modest ideas on how it was going to be when we first got it started. But like a lot of things, once you get a ball rolling down a mountain, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's become something of a monster. It's huge. When we asked for submissions, we got, I believe it's 145 films submitted. And I'm on one of the programmers. And so I sat through a goodly number of those to pick out. I think we have about 60 films, which are going to be playing. It's so big that the original dates, which is October the 10th through the 13th, just wasn't big enough. We have showings outside of the official period now. I think from, I want to say, October the 7th all the way through October the 17th. We have films on all kinds of social justice issues. One of the highlights, we have a few highlights. We have so many highlights. One of the big ones, one of the really cool things that we have is that we have the North American premiere of the film Tula, The Revolt, which is Danny Glover's latest movie based on a slave revolt in 1795 in the Dutch West Indies. We decided that it was going to be big enough that we'd get Cinerama to play that one. So we have Danny Glover coming over to do a Q&A to do that, which we're very excited about. That's the final evening gala on October the 13th. We have the noted anti-death penalty activist Sister Helen Prejean, who was the author of Dead Man Walking, which was later turned into the movie with Sean Penn and Susan Sarandon. She's going to be doing a presentation on the 12th and doing a speech along with the film then. We have one of the other highlights for us will be the 40th anniversary party of Books to Prisoners, in which we'll also be playing Mothers of Bedford, which is a great, great documentary on following five mothers, struggling to be mothers while incarcerated in the Bedford Hills correctional facility in New York. The areas that we're covering are just, it's all over the place. We have films on environmentalism and LGBT issues. There's a couple of great films, one called Transgender Tuesday and another one called Il Rosa Nudo. for which the director is coming over from Italy. It's powerful. It's a powerful, powerful movie, let me tell you. We also have a competition that that we put out for youth, folks under 21 to submit short films. And that's going to be a program that we're going to have at the Majestic Bay in downtown Ballard. Yeah, it's just big, very, very big for us.
Very good. I always like about the film festivals is that you have the opportunity to connect with people that made the films at times, which I find really valuable.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's going to be great to have directors over from several of the films. In addition to the director of Il Rosenudo from Italy, we have one of the directors the director from Happy Lands, which is a film in Scotland. He's going to be coming over, and also the director of Tula, the Revolt, Jeroen Krabbe, I think it is coming over from the Netherlands. So it's a really an international thing. Again, so much larger than we were expecting it to be. And Mike, it's a bargain, can I just tell you? The tickets are a bargain. The individual seats are only going to be $8, and there are some discounts for students and seniors. And of course, you know, you can't see a regular movie in Seattle for $8. So we want the movies to be seen, because there are so many important movies at the festival. The idea is not to make any kind of money out of this. Hopefully we won't lose money. The idea is that these films on these important issues just need to be seen. And we think with the size of the festival that we have right now, we can really focus on these issues. And if we get an audience, that is the big thing. We need the audience to show up.
And these films will be playing at places like the Cinerama, other places as well?
Yeah, Cinerama. We have for the one showing, we have the Youth Visions program is at the Majestic Bay. A lot of films will be showing at the Market Theatre in Pike Place Market, and the Rainier Valley Cultural Centre. All the entire program should be on the website, which is socialjusticefilmfestival.org. I hope I got that right.
Very good.
But you can go Google Social Justice Film Festival and we'll come up.
And is that the place that people can buy their tickets?
Yeah, tickets. You can go in through the socialjusticefilmfestival.org website. I believe we're trying to sell them in advance at brownpapertickets.com. Yeah.
All right. So, and in addition to that, what is the best way for people to connect with Books to Prisoners to support the work that you're doing?
Go to the website, booksprisoners.net. If you have specific questions, once you've looked at the website, then you can email me at books2prisoners@live.com.
All right. So with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure.
We've just been talking with Andy Chan. He is a longtime volunteer, board member, and past president of Books to Prisoners, and you can find out more about Books to Prisoners at their website, bookstoprisoners.net, and you can find out more about the Social Justice Film Festival, which starts as early as October 7th, goes through the 17th, at their website, socialjusticefilmfestival.org.